Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. I take every quiz somebody tells me to take. What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
With Margaret Abels
and Amy Wilson. I'm an obliger. I do what people tell me to do. A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to. I'm hashtag Team Dr. Amy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And today we're talking about going with your gut and doing what's right for your kid.
Going with your gut.
Yeah.
I'm liking it.
This is like tide swimming against.
Right.
To mix metaphors.
Yeah, it is. We're going to have all the metaphors going. Tide swimming against, hacking through the brush. I don't know. There's a ton of metaphors here.
There is a, I think we've all done this at times in our lives. I'm anxious to hear about your own. Well, I know a couple of your own from all these episodes we've done together, but I'm still sort of learning about this topic. And I think it's an important one to discuss. There's times that all of us have had to go against the grain or go against what we were being told by a teacher or a specialist or a doctor was the right thing for our kid because something told us that that wasn't exactly the right answer.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about them today. We went to our Facebook group. If you guys are members of our page, but not our group, I recommend going to the page, clicking visit group, which is right in the top, and joining our group. The difference between a page and a group is that in the group, you can talk to one another, which is amazing. But also, you know, if you're in the group that when there's important conversations, you'll see them. Facebook doesn't show you everything that we post just because you like our page. We wish they did. They don't.
Rude, Facebook.
So if you really want to be part of the conversation, you should join the group. So I put this same question on the page and the group, but the group was where we really got a ton of response and reaction because I think you guys saw it. The question we asked was, is there a time in your life where you had to swim against the tide to do what was right for your kid, when you had to make the hard choice or the unconventional choice or go with your gut and it was the right thing to have done? And we got a million answers.
Yeah, I think this question is really interesting, and there's a lot of interesting responses to it. And I mean, going with your gut is a balanced thing like everything else, you know? I think there are times when I'm sometimes paralyzed by this feeling of like, I have this instinct, and like you have a lot of competing messages basically coming in your brain at all times. And if you're an anxious person, as I am, it can sometimes feel a little bit like, messages coming in all the time, and sorting through that can be complicated. But I think there is this absolute truth of like mom instinct that is worth talking about.
Have you seen the Harriet Tubman movie?
No.
It's very good. I really recommend it. Anyway, she has a sort of, you know, sixth sense that the movie suggests is she was badly injured. She had a brain injury as a child, and she sort of has seizures and passes out, which is true about Harriet Tubman. But the movie sort of takes it to another level that she has the powers of clairvoyance because of this injury, that she sees what's going to happen. And that's why she was Harriet Tubman. She could tell when something bad was about to happen and like make another choice.
Huh.
She could get away from the bad thing. And I think what you're saying is interesting. When you have anxiety, you get that feeling, right? Like something bad's about to happen and you might be right. And it might just be the anxiety talking. It doesn't mean...
It's a tricky one for me because, I mean, this is seared in my brain. I must have been in high school and I was watching Oprah on TV, possibly an oldie Lox alert.
back in my day,
because now I think people just think Oprah is like this like godlike figure. And like she used to have a daily television show that I used to watch.
Right. She used to.
And it was something about, I don't remember what, but it was somebody was like breaking into somebody's house or something. She was telling a story and she's like, I had this instinct. And Oprah like looked right in the camera and she was like, never ignore your instincts. And it like activated some weird part of my brain. And but I feel like I wish I'd never seen it, because I feel like it's triggered more. It's like an anxiety thing. Like, do I have this feeling? And sometimes it's just insanity on my part. And it can be hard for me to suss out like what is like hum of anxiety and what is mom instinct.
Well, let's start with a small win, okay? Because we heard of all kinds of ways you guys have gone with your gut, and little and small, and of dire importance, and of you go girl. And so we'll start simple, because it won't get scary too quickly for you.
I think that's always a good way to go on the podcast, not scary too quickly.
We won't scare you right up front. So we'll start with Jessica. She says that her son's teacher told her and her spouse that her son was ready to get out of diapers at 22 months old. And he was her first child. So she was like, okay, we'll do this. She was pregnant with her second. She was studying to pass the bar exam. So, you know, not much on her plate or anything.
Yeah, got a few things going on, Jessica did. Yeah.
And she decides to potty train a not quite 2-year-old kid because the teacher told her to. She says, it was a total disaster that ended with me and him crying on the bathroom floor. And it finally dawned on me that maybe he wasn't ready and would be in his own time. And why am I doing this anyway? So I told his teacher we were stopping, and the teacher told her I was sending him the message that he had failed.
Ooh.
Instead of backing down, I stuck to it and told her I'd let her know when he was ready. And then he was, about a year later, and I had learned the lesson of trusting both him and myself in the process.
Oh, that's a good leadoff story. I mean, that's chock full of good messages.
Yes.
I mean, Jessica, first of all, you are so brave. Like, I think I would have cried and been like, you have to learn. I'm sorry. The teacher's very scary.
The teacher said, yeah.
Like, I think, I don't know that I could have stood up in the face of a teacher telling me I was sending a message to my child that they'd failed.
Oh my gosh, right? You know how Gretchen Rubin has those four tendencies? I don't know that much about it, but I, of course, took the quiz to find out which tendency I was, because...
Of course you did.
I take every quiz somebody tells me to take, because I'm Anne.
Because Amy, yes.
I'm an obliger. I do what people tell me to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also kind of an obliger, but I am a reactionary to authority figures. Like, I find there are... I'll be talking to other moms, and they're like, and I just told the teacher that she was being an idiot. And I'm like,
you did?
Like, how could you tell an authority figure that they were wrong? That is just not in my DNA.
I mean, just to take the other side of this, when you do have one kid and you're talking to a teacher who's been teaching nursery school for 35 years, there's a chance that that teacher has some pearls of wisdom you could learn from. But yeah, in this case, I mean, we've talked about this on the show. If you try something with your kid and it's really, really not working, just like revisit it in 6 weeks, 6 months, just back off. And
well, I think that's helpful for me, because I'm talking about being caught in this cycle of like, is it an instinct or is it like weird OCD anxiety problem? Like, I think... The other lesson here is like, it's the, I don't remember whose quote it is, but it's like when someone tells you who they are, believe them. Like when your kid shows you where they are, believe them also. Like potty training should never be like everyone's crying and it's miserable and fraught. It's fine to just be like, we'll do this a little bit later.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience, which I've talked about, so I'll be brief. I opted out of homework for my kindergartner. He went to a kindergarten class where it was like there was 2 hours of crazy, like fun projects every single night. And I was like, this is not what my kid needs. My kid's like very, you know, motion based and needed to come home and play and relax after full day kindergarten. He was a 4-year-old kindergartner. And the teacher just would give me the what for on it. I'd be like, well, it was so sad. Everyone else had their chef's hat decorated with their favorite food and your kid didn't have theirs. And it was so sad for him. And I basically stuck to my guns. I was like, my kid does not need to come home from 8 hours of kindergarten and then spend 2 hours on a project that he's not interested in, that he's not developmentally ready for. But as I went through the process, it kept proving me right, you know?
Yeah, you have to live with a little bit of discomfort, right? Like you're like, oh, maybe he should have a chef's hat and nobody else, you know, everybody else has one and not my kid. And there, It isn't like there are zero consequences and zero second thoughts, right? That's not the goal here, but it was the right thing for your kid.
Yeah. And I occasionally like found the middle ground where I would just make whatever the project was and hand it to him when he walked out the door. And I'm like, here's your chef's hat. Like now you don't have to be sad that you don't have it. And you don't have to spend 2 hours making a chef's hat at the end of an 8-hour day when you're exhausted.
Jenna says that her 8-year-old son doesn't do any sports. She says, we get asked all the time if he plays this or that. And I say, no, he doesn't like sports. And most people find that sad or disappointing because he's a boy.
Jenna, you can't see me right now, but I'm making the like fingers to my lips and then fingers in the air Hunger Games salute to you because I'm exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Two of my kids don't play any sports and it's fine.
They do Boy Scouts. They do other things. I mean, I guess, am I about to argue that kids should have some kind of activity? I guess I was about to, and maybe not. Like, maybe your kid really likes to, like, birdwatch in the backyard. I think doing what's right for your kid does mean that we have to take on a little bit of the tisk-tisk of society. I mean, better us than the kid, but we still have to put up with it.
I definitely think when it comes to like generalized expectations, and I do think this is something that our generation is actually better at than other people before us, which is like expectations for how children will behave. We've started to realize that that's not really a thing. That like a little girl should go over and give Uncle Bob a kiss whenever he comes in. Like we've sort of gotten to the point of like, oh no, you don't actually have to do things you don't want to do because other people think that is the expectation that is on you.
Yeah.
And gendered expectations has a lot of this, you know, like boys should act like this and girls should act like this. I do think we've gotten a little bit better at being like, yeah, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
Like I may have a boy who is sensitive in all of these ways and like, I'm not going to tell him like, act like a man. Like we're kind of over that. We get it. Like it's not a thing.
Rosie talks about how important it is that her kids stick to a normal routine. And this really hits on when the people who are giving you pushback are your relatives. She says, even when my family is visiting from out of town, my daughter needs structure and routine. She says she needs the toys put away before she can go to bed at night, like that kind of a kid. The amount of times I've been given a hard time and still get told I was being ridiculous when I insisted we would not go to insert fun, crazy, overstimulating activity here all day was a constant battle. No one understands that a 1 to 2 year old can't push through or just take a power nap.
Yeah, I mean, this is another good example. And I mean, I often argue that like work from your most generous point of view. So like if it's like, oh, it's a whole family activity, like, you know, I don't love always being the person who's like, we can't do anything because it's really all about my kids' schedules. I try to operate from a place of like, how can we make this work and how can we participate in fun things? But at the same time, those people may not have an understanding that like, if my kids get 6 hours of sleep 3 days in a row, they are going to be unbelievable monsters by day four. And then everyone's going to be looking at me like, what's wrong with your kids? So like, you do have to manage this and you definitely have to push back against the thing of like, you're no fun. And like, yeah, I guess I'm no fun. It's okay.
There are some kids who can manage with a power nap and the stroller, right? Like it occurs to me listening to this that some kids can push through. Some kids will just sleep in the next morning. Like they weren't my kids, but I know kids who could just roll up the punches and stay up until midnight because they'd sleep until 10. Like, and if you have that kid, then maybe you have to push back from the, you know, well-meaning mother-in-law always telling you a baby should sleep in her crib when your baby sleeps just fine in the stroller. But if you have a kid that needs sleep and structure, and I will argue that most do, this is really hard when you have to disappoint and get pushback from your own parents or your in-laws or your cousins.
And I think one thing you say a lot is like, give voice to it, which I think can be really helpful in these situations, which is like, the thing is, if we do that, we can't do anything else tonight because it just means she's going to be so tired that she's going to be unreasonable the rest of the day. And like, and kind of talking it through a little bit so it doesn't feel like, because I feel like sometimes these can feel like power plays when you're with in-laws and family members. And it's like the struggle becomes like, I want to do this. Well, I can't. I have a kid, you know, and trying to kind of give voice to the big picture of like, well, we stayed up late last night. So if we stay up late tonight again, tomorrow is just going to be a wash, you know, and kind of painting out the picture, but at the end of the day, you do what's right for your kid.
You know, it occurs to me that this isn't always possible, right? So my sister-in-law got married, gosh, it's 10 years ago now, so...
Isn't that amazing how that happened?
Yeah, like, what? So...
You're like, it was yesterday. Oh, no, it was 10 years ago. Oops, I'm old.
Maybe it was 9 years ago. Anyway, my now 12-year-old was 3, and she was in the wedding, and, you know, there was a very lengthy photo-taking session that was going to go right through what her nap was, and that, and she was supposed to be cute and in the pictures, and I can see going into it like, okay, this is going to be, she's not going to be her best self for these pictures. However, I don't get to be like, the wedding day schedule has to change because my 3-year-old needs a nap. Like, that's a time when you got to go with the flow. But when it's...
That's, I think, the trick of this thing is like not being kind of the like, I have kids and therefore I am queen of the world, but also
right,
sort of saying like, hey, is there a way we can structure this so it's going to work a little bit better?
In that case, I remember it just happened to work out great because they were behind schedule and I just drove her on the block until she fell asleep for like 18 minutes, which was all she needed to push through. But on the other hand, if that same family was like, let's go to the pumpkin patch and let's leave at 12:30. Then I think it's fine to say, can we do that in the morning? Or can I maybe stay back with the baby? Or it's okay when the schedule isn't the most important thing that's ever happened to put what your kid needs first.
For sure. And fundamentally, your kids, your rules. But we're just saying, like, is there any wiggle room in the schedule? All right, Amy, we'll be right back.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies, and as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order. We had a ton of people when we asked the question, when did you have to go with your gut for your kid and do what was right, talk about school stuff. And so I thought we should talk about those because there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, a lot of instinct following going on with the school stuff.
And this happened to me. Danielle says her son was young for his grade, only 30 days away from the cutoff. So that's one of those things where they're like, it's really up to you. I had no concrete evidence or evaluation that said he wasn't ready. I only had my intuition. I held him back. The school called me, aren't you going to register him for kindergarten? And I just said no, and that was that. It was the best decision for me.
This is like, we could do four episodes on red shirting, they call it, kindergartners, like holding them back.
Yeah. And I did this with one of my kids. He was the youngest in his grade. And it was a fraught decision for me. In case anybody's listening, I want to give you a really good nugget of wisdom that'll help you discern this if you're struggling with this for your kid. First of all, if you're asking the question, I don't know, should we? It's worth considering that you probably should, or else you wouldn't be wondering if you should. But the sort of thing that really tipped it for me, my kid that I was going to hold back had an older brother, so he was the little brother at home. And then he was also the youngest in his class at school. And a friend of mine who did not hold her kid back, she's like, no, it was fine because he's the big kid at home. It's okay for him to be the little kid at school. And as soon as I heard that, it was very clear to me that I needed my kid to have one arena where he wasn't rushing to catch up with the bigger kids.
Yeah.
So that helped me.
I had a whole debate about this with two of my kids, and I just kind of went with the flow.
You just went with the flow. Well, Angie did the opposite. She says, I did the opposite. My son was 12 days past the cutoff, and I fought to get him into kindergarten early. He was bored in pre-K. I knew that would lead to behavior issues. I knew he'd be a little bit behind, but I could work with him on the social maturity stuff, and I knew he would do better being challenged rather than being the oldest and having things come easier. So I think it's important to say, like, this really is like what's right for your kid, that it isn't always better to hold them back. Not at all.
Yeah, I had two. I had a kid who was a 4-year-old kindergarten, probably wasn't ready. And I sent him, and I had a kid who was too ready for kindergarten, maybe should have skipped kindergarten or started a year earlier. And I couldn't make that happen. And so I also will say the flip side of this is, like, these seem like the hugest decisions of your life. And there's all these books that are like all the soccer stars or the kids who started later. Da, 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 da. It feels so epic. And I just got to a point with both of my kids that it was going to be this protracted battle, and I was like, yeah, let's just see how it goes. And it's been fine. I mean, would maybe they be doing better in other situations? They might, but I couldn't get excited about this issue for some reason, and I went with the flow, and it's also working fine.
Jessica talked about, she was the one who had to potty train her kid too early because the teacher said to, and she was crying in the bathroom floor. And it occurred to me when you're saying these feel so important, like even that now when I have, you know, teenagers, I'm like, oh, just wait, you can potty train when he's ready.
Right.
When you're in it and the teacher is saying there's something wrong with your kid unless he gets potty trained by next Tuesday, you're not wrong when it seems like overwhelmingly important to you. You're being told that it is. It is your assignment to do this impossible task, and it seems overwhelming. And it seems if you don't get your kid potty trained now, if you just say, okay, we're going to wait, that it will never happen, that your kid is doomed to a life of, and we do a little bit of that to ourselves, but also this teacher telling her, like, whoa, you set your child up for failure. Like,
all wrong.
We're not wrong because we're constantly told that this stuff is of earth-shattering importance, even when it isn't.
And I do think that's a good instinct to have with all this stuff, because for people like me, the idea of, like, the day you ignore your mom instinct is the day it all goes wrong. That it's not really a thing. I mean, you should follow your instincts. You should follow what's best for yourself. But, like, it's also good to take the pressure off of this thing of, like, my mom instinct definitely told me my 4-year-old shouldn't be in kindergarten and my other 5 older kids should have started earlier. It didn't work out. And guess what? We're all getting through the day. It's okay.
Yeah, I want this to be uplifting.
Oh, yes. No pressure, people. No pressure. It's all going to go good and bad no matter what road you choose. We're just trying to help a little bit.
I'll give you another good story. Tammy says, my son was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder when he was 4. She had been a public school teacher before he was born, so he was about to go to public school. She knew it was going to be challenging in some ways. After struggling through kindergarten and grade 1 with a lot of stress and anxiety and disappointment, we decided to pull him out of public school, and I homeschooled him for 3 years. Many people in our lives were shocked at our unconventional choice, but it was the best decision we ever made. Our family's anxiety decreased, and my son and I bonded in a special way. He now attends a private school for kids with autism, but I really believe the few years we kept him home saved us from a life full of strife and stress.
What I like about this, and it's such a good job, Tammy, that's all I'm going to say to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of this instinct stuff is about, like, what is your goal? Is the top of your triangle, like, stress-free existence to a certain point? You know, your life is not going to be stress-free, but, like, if you find yourselves in situations that are really not working, it is a great idea to say to yourself, how can we change this situation? You know, and that may be every time we go home to visit or to the in-laws' house, the kids end up overtired and we kind of have a miserable trip. I'm going to insist on a schedule when we're there, even if people think I'm crazy. You know, my kid is really not functioning in the public school system for whatever reason or in the school situation that he's in. Maybe I'm going to take him out for a couple of years and homeschool. Like, I think that version of following your instincts, I can get 1000% behind. This potty training thing is us crying every night on the bathroom floor. We're going to stop doing this. Why are we doing this thing? Why is it making us miserable?
Yeah, because we're listening to the authority figures who are telling us to, but sometimes we can go with our gut.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to use your mom instincts.
Laura says that she had to pull her daughter out of school and homeschool her for a year while she participated in intensive outpatient therapy. People told Laura that her daughter would never recover socially, and she was making a mistake homeschooling her. She says, fast forward 8 years, she's a senior with leadership positions in her music department. I think I made the right choice.
Yeah, sounds like you did, Laura. Another really good job to you.
I think I've talked about this once before, but I like it so much I'm going to say it again. I was talking to an actor years ago, like a sort of like wizened, like, "Hey, kid, this is how life is," you know, like that kind of.
Listen, kid.
Oh, listen, kid. Like a picture like Walter Matthau.
Old Elox alert.
Back in my day.
No one knows who that is.
Who should I say?
I don't know.
Picture.
We don't know who the new grumpy guy is.
Steve Buscemi. I was trying to decide, like, should I do this Romeo and Juliet tour that was going to be a year of me, like, driving around in a van being, you know, Juliet in schools across the United States, or should I move to New York to, you know, seek my fame and fortune and not wait another moment? And I was, oh, should I don't know, but it's this and it's this and it's this. And the guy was sitting there smoking a cigarette. We were backstage and finally I was like, just make a choice and then make that choice the right decision to have made.
Yeah. I mean, that's
it. I was like, huh. Right? Like, Laura had to homeschool her kid. You commit to it. People are telling you it's the wrong decision. Well, it's a decision I've made. And then, you know, 8 years later, you made it the right decision by everything that you did to back it up.
I think that's what I keep coming back to. It's like, we like to think of life as like door number one or door number two, the lady or the tiger, you know, like, what are you going to get? And life is nothing like that. It's like a series of winding paths that continue to intersect further in the forest. Like, it's not like door number one leads to happiness and door number two leads to doom. It just does not work that way.
And it also doesn't work that way that you're going to know right away, like within 3 days, oh, homeschooling was the best decision I ever made, right? Without any doubt. It's okay if these decisions are sort of fuzzy for a while. Can I read you what Emily said? She
you
has
may.
A similar situation, actually, to what we were just talking about. So she, Emily, is also a public school teacher. She just quit to stay home with her 4.5-year-old. She says he started pre-K. Within a month, she realized it wasn't a great fit for him. He was young for his grade. He needs work on functional skills, even though he's advanced academically. We started seeing signs of anxiety in him. I quit my job mid-year, and we found a part-time Montessori program that better suits his needs. But then she says, I've worked his whole life, and work is a huge part of my identity. After a month at home, I can see this new setup is much better for him, but this has been a completely new process for me to learn to be a stay-at-home mom. And I continue to grapple with my own mixed feelings.
And this is illustrative of the point we were just making, which is like, could either of those paths have worked out? Probably. But Emily chose to stay at home. And like, it's not like that door led to perfect happiness and the other door would have been, you know, sorrow. It's like you're kind of constantly making choices and then you can choose something else, too. It's not two doors.
That's just it. This isn't permanent. When you decide, okay, I'm going to stop potty training this kid right now, it isn't my kid will go to college in diapers. It's just right now, we're going to make another choice for right now. And if it makes it easier to make a big decision that way, then do it that way.
Yeah, that's what makes sense for me.
Jacqueline says that staying home was the right choice for her. She says she worked part-time throughout her pregnancy, planned on returning after her maternal leave, but she just couldn't do it. It's been harder financially, and my husband has been working overtime to make up for it, but I really am so happy I'm staying home with my son, and in 17 days, our daughter. Good luck, Jacqueline.
Yeah.
You did not make the easier choice, staying home with a toddler and a baby.
And again, these choices are just so fluid. Like, since I've had kids, I've been home with them, I've worked part-time, I've worked full-time, I've been home again. Like, it's a long and winding road, you know?
The realization that your path should change or might change. It's a meandering path. I think we're lucky in that way. I think we're lucky that, like, our parents, if they worked, had one job for 50 years and then got the gold watch.
Yep.
Or, like, my mom, she taught second grade for 2 years. I think it might even be 1.5 years. And then I came along and, like, that was the end of that. The school gave her, like, a retirement party because you didn't come back to work after you had a kid, not in that day and age.
Right.
And it was decided, you know, and now I just feel like, oh, should I get my MFA? Should I do this? Should I work part-time? Should I try this? We have options, and that's sometimes we can feel sort of choked by the options, but they're good. It's all good.
Oh, for sure. But I do think that my aunt, who was on the podcast a long time ago, talks about that all the time. She's like, it was kind of nice not to have a ton of options. She's like, I look at my kids and they're like, are they choosing from a range of 10,000 choices? And she's like, I feel like I was choosing from a range of 5 choices. It wasn't as complicated, you know?
Yeah.
It's basically like, well, that'll be the end of my career when I have a kid. And, you know, having a lot of choices is great, but it can also sort of paralyze you into this, like, there is a perfect choice and a bad choice. And if I choose incorrectly, it's a problem.
I guess the going with your gut thing, that's what happens when the choice isn't clear. I mean, I'm saying something obvious, but it just is becoming obvious to me now. Like, that's what going with your gut means when you don't know which one is better, when it seems like either one might work. This is your only choice. And I guess I just want to say, like, it can work out. And sometimes listening to your instincts is the right answer.
Yeah, I agree.
Diane says her first child was a very late talker and she would bring it up to the pediatrician and the pediatrician would just kind of brush it off. Something told me, she says, it wasn't just a speech issue. After lots of appointments and evaluations and research of my own, I realized it was a severe tongue tie. We scheduled elective surgery. Within 6 weeks, my son was speaking fluent, grammatically correct English with strong vocabulary.
All right. That was a good instinct you had there, Diane.
Yeah. Have you ever been in that situation where the pediatrician sort of pats you on the head and sends you home and you should have listened to your instinct? I don't mean about like 106 degree fever. I just had a very colicky baby. This was my example. And I kept saying, like, he cries a lot. But again, he was my first. So they were like, babies cry. That's right, mommy. Well, that's how it is. And it wasn't until he was 10 weeks old that I went in. I mean, I was losing my mind at this point. I went in. This was my, like, attack. I was like, my mother and my mother-in-law both say there's something wrong with this baby, which they had. They were like, this is not right, Amy. And they were right. And I was right. But I was very easily for 10 weeks sort of sent home like, it's okay, mommy. And I had a push.
Yeah. I mean, that story repeats and repeats and repeats. And we hear more and more about, like, especially women in doctor's offices getting dismissed for their concerns. And I think the top of that mountain is that you know your kid best and that that instinct is the correct instinct. But I'm going to argue the other side of that when we come back as well.
Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own, and today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
And now, things moms just know in their guts.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast.
When you see a kid scratching their head, it's never dandruff.
It's lice. Listen, it's always lice.
When the school calls, it's not going to be good news.
People, they're not calling to tell you that your kid is doing a great job in math class. Your kid barfed, or maybe pulled the fire alarm.
When toddlers are noisy, it's annoying.
But when toddlers are silent, they're destroying something you cherish. Move quickly.
When your son wants to show you something really cool that he found outside,
there's like a 92% chance that thing is going to be gross and or dead.
That thing that literally no one in your house can find?
If you look, you will find it in under 19 seconds.
No matter how much you think you are ready to own a white couch,
you are not ready to own a white couch. That white blouse? That's not for you either.
This has been Things Moms Just Know in Their Guts.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast.
So I do think that following your instinct when it comes to your kid is right. But when it gets into medical territory, I have also had the opposite experience where it was like, there's something going on here with one of your kids. And I was like, my kid's perfect. You're dumb. And it was not correct. There was something going on. And it took me a long time to realize it because it was bringing up a defensiveness in me that like, no, you're all crazy. And these days, everyone thinks something's going on with every kid and blah, 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 blah. So I think when it comes to medical issues, this is a bit of a, you've got to walk this balance beam between like, fundamentally, yes, you know your kid better than anyone else. If you have a nagging concern, you should listen to it and you should address it. But doctors have also studied medicine a lot longer than you, and what you found on Google may not be exactly correct. It also may be, this is a tricky one, I think.
Absence of nagging concern on the parent's part does not mean absence of problem.
Right.
Right. I mean, presence of nagging concern is worth listening to, but you're sort of talking about the opposite. When the doctor has a nagging concern and you're like, nope, nothing to see here.
Yeah.
That's worth considering.
And I've seen it happen a lot at school with people where they're like, well, this rude teacher thinks my kid is blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, you should listen to that, whatever that is. If people are bringing you concerns about your child, I would weigh them pretty seriously. If they are the potty training example, you may dismiss them. But if they are like a behavior issue at school and your instinct is like, I am not listening to that because
my
children all behave differently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. From my experience, maybe just take it seriously. It doesn't mean someone else is right, but I think sometimes it's hard to hear perspectives on your kid that you're not ready for.
I can think of times that I've had concerns expressed to me that were spot on, and I'm very grateful. And I can think of concerns that were expressed to me that were completely like incorrect and off base and out of proportion. But I will say that
absolutely for me as well. Literally, like I could name you four examples of each.
But I do feel like none of them were offered out of unkindness or were offered lightly. Like I felt like I was trying to take in the moment that some learning specialist is saying, I think that there's a problem here that I wasn't seeing. You can at least stop and say like, okay, this isn't easy for this person to tell me that they feel this way. They had to like gather up their courage to bring this up and make this point. So you can take it or not take it, but if it meant enough to them to have an uncomfortable conversation with you, then it deserves to at least be listened to, even if you're going to dismiss it later.
And kept in the overall file, I have one of my kids, and I'm going to speak very generally, who has had 1 year a teacher bring something to my attention that he was concerned with in his learning. And then the next year, the teacher was like, I don't see that at all. And then the year after that, the teacher was like, yeah, I see that thing. And then the next year, the teacher was like, I don't think it's a big deal. And so it always constantly in my file about this kid that like two different teachers have had concerns about this thing. So I need to stay on top of it. And I don't think it is a concern that needs medical intervention or other kinds of strong interventions. But I'm like, this is something that people see in my kid, more than one person. And so I'm going to really keep that in mind. And when I meet the new teachers each year, I'm going to be like, so this has been brought up as a concern. Is that something that you're seeing?
Even when it's something concrete, like there's an example here, Tiffany says that her son had torticollis, which is like the flat head thing where they put the cranial helmet on kids.
Yes.
And so her kid had it and she said okay to the PT, but no to the helmet. She just like, it's just not right for my kid. I wouldn't want to wear a helmet and I'm not going to put a helmet on my kid. And her kid is four and it worked out for her kid. So that was her. I mean, I'm not going to say whether you should put a helmet on your kid or not. I don't know. My oldest had a little bit of a flat head. It was enough that the doctor was like, eh, let's leave it alone. It'll be fine. If I had to make this call, I don't know what I would pick. But I guess I just mean like, even when there's like, it's black and white, the kid has this condition, there are still sort of ways you can treat it, ways you can respond, and you get to be a partner in that discussion.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're in total landmine territory here because we're talking about like your instinct versus doctor's recommendations. And I'm going to say, as a person, personally, I firmly come down on the side of doctors. Like, I am always team, like, I think that I would do what a doctor told me to do because they have more information than I do. Would I then bring to a doctor's attention more information that might help them make that decision? I would. But at the end of the day, I'm hashtag team doctor, Amy.
You know what? I think it's the same thing you were saying before. Like, it occurs to me again, it's like the doctor saying, nope, nothing wrong here. And you have a feeling that there is. It's the presence of your nagging concern.
Yes.
Right. And just because if the doctor says there's something going on and you're like, I don't see it, that doesn't mean you're off scot free because your gut tells you your kid's fine.
Right. I just think we should not overestimate the role of the gut in medical decisions. I just worry about that road.
I'll give you one that's a little more something you can get behind. So Allison says, this is a yikes. So her son needed a revision to his circumcision after he was born because the gynecologist messed it up, basically. Her second kid was born. Same doctor came to get the baby to do the procedure. And Allison had to say, I want a different doctor to do the procedure.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's solid. I'm 100% behind this.
She says, it was so awkward, but I had to trust my mom gut. I don't know if I could have done that. I think I would have like moved away so I could have a new gynecologist.
I would have. And I'll tell you why. I have an example of this from my own life. I had to go to an ER. I don't remember how old I was, maybe 9 or 10. I was young, but I remember it so clearly. And I've always been told this when I donate blood or anything, I have like a low set veins or something. They're hard to find my veins. And I don't know what medical person came in and was trying to draw blood. And she stuck the needle in my arm 4 different times and was like, no, I can't find a vein. I can't find a vein. And she went to do it a 5th time. And my mom grabbed her by the arm and she was like, I need you to go find somebody else to go do this. And she was like, yeah, we're not going to just keep trying. Like, you've tried 4 times. It's not working out. Go find a more senior person who knows what they're doing. And I remember as a child being so struck, and that memory is so clear in my mind of like, that is a mom. That is what a mother does. You know what I mean? Like, I do think that trusting, being brave enough, because I was said earlier, like, oh, I'd never do this. I would never do that. People putting other people in danger. Like, that's the mom role right there.
Yes.
You know, you got to step in for those things and be like, nope, this is not happening. That's mother bear moment.
This is my mother bear moment. I was at the orthodontist with one of my kids and they were getting like braces put on. And anyway, one of the brackets put on, my kid, like all of a sudden, like yelps in pain and sits up like and starts like panting. And then, you know, person putting the brackets on, I was like, I don't know why that happened. Oh, that's weird. Lies back down. Minute later, same tooth, like sits back up and, you know, like, oh my God, that kind of thing. Like 10 out of 10 pain. And I say, stop. Let's get the doctor to come over. The doctor comes over and both the doctor and the assistant were sort of like they looked at the tooth. Like, there's no reason why this should be hurting. And so like, so let's proceed. And I'm like, my kid is not like making up. Like, I just saw it happen twice, but they were very stuck on, I don't see a reason why this would be happening, therefore it's not happening. Like, therefore, like, your kid is like making it up or something. I'm like, if the kid was fine with the 25 other brackets and just screamed in pain about this one tooth, like, we're not moving forward until you can figure out a way to fix this, or else we can just also leave. Like, we're not moving forward with this. But it was a moment where I kind of saw, like, I think when it's your kid, right, when it's your mama bear, like, you won't hurt my cub. And when it's not your kid, you can be a little more removed about it. Like, well, there's no evidence of what would be causing a problem, therefore there's no problem. And I think that's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, no. I think those moments, I don't know. The doctor thing is so tricky and it leads into all sorts of different things. But I do think, yes, you are there to protect your child fundamentally. And that's the instinct that you should work on.
Right. And so anyway, it was awkward and weird. And we got some pain medication and then the appointment finished. And like, it was worth that awkward moment of me saying, like, this will not stand. And I'm sure they thought I was crazy, but it like it worked out. You know, it was worth that moment of discomfort to push for what was right for my kid.
Oh, for sure. And I think as you go forward in life, like leading with the instinct of like, I am here to make sure that you stay safe. That's your job. That's your role. And you should be doing that. And you should be doing that when like a 16-year-old comes to pick up your other 16-year-old at 8 o'clock at night and be like, no, you're not getting in that car. Like, you should be doing that.
And with one that is absolutely wonderful and positive and can feel good about it. Trisha says she has a son, her first child, that's adopted from Russia. The process was getting hard, long, expensive, and the country shut down for a bit. Some, she wrote my husband in parentheses, my husband, started to say, maybe it wasn't meant to be. No, he was our boy, and we were going to get this worked out. It felt like we were fighting an entire corrupt government, but eventually we got it done. We celebrate 9 years home next month.
Good instincts, Trisha. Good instincts.
That's your boy.
Yep. And I do think that, like, there is that role. I mean, there's a million movies about this, right? Like, everyone's like, there's no cure for this disease. And like, the one mom is like, no, I will find it. And like,
yes,
you know, mom warriors. And you see that vision repeated throughout popular culture and reality and everywhere else. Like, being a warrior on behalf of your kids is a big part of your job. I'm here for it.
All right, Margaret, I want to wrap up with this fantastic quote from Nicole. She's a listener from Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Nicole.
Oh, love that.
I love what she wrote so much. I think we should read it. All right, here we go. We're going to go back and forth. Nicole says, in some way, isn't this all of us?
Whether we choose to have children in our early 20s or late 30s or even hashtag Margaret 40s.
If we're parenting alone or with a tribe.
If we co-sleep or had our baby in the crib from day one.
If we breastfed or bottle fed, homeschooled or public schooled, on and on.
Nicole says, don't we all at some point feel alone and stay up late nights worrying if we are making the right choices? Don't we all look at someone else and feel like they are mothering better? That is what is beautiful about being a mom, is this innate gift we have to advocate for our children. Being a mother to me is learning to trust and tune out other choices and know I am doing the best I can with what I have.
The times I have felt alone, Nicole says, is when I looked around and couldn't see others like me. When I feel supported is when I look around and see we are all doing the best for ourselves and our families.
I'm not taking away the pain and the struggle that we feel advocating for ourselves when the world is against us, the struggle to find the right doctor, therapist, teacher, or program.
But when I am trusting my gut is when I feel closer to my kids.
Nicole, you need to host your own podcast.
Yeah.
What fresh Nicole? Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. That, like, the trick of this is that it is fundamentally our jobs to be our kids' advocate and to really look out for them. And trusting our instincts is a big part of that. And knowing that, like, you are the person assigned the job of helping your child navigate this life. And so it's a pretty big responsibility. And you need to follow your instincts. And when other people come from the sidelines to be like, actually, you should, you know, you can tune a lot of that stuff out because you are the person who understands them best. But then just leave a little hole in that layer for valid and good advice and critique to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Not as easy as it sounds. I get that. Like, even as I'm saying it, it's like, it's a hard balance.
Your gut instinct shouldn't like keep things out. It should let things in, I guess, when possible. You should have a leaky gut instinct.
Leaky gut instinct. It sounds disgusting, but it is good advice.
We solved it.
Totally solved this one. I love, we're going to make leaky gut instinct t-shirts, guys, and sell them soon.
All right. We want to continue this conversation and talk about going with our gut and doing what's right for our kid. We already told you, you can go to our Facebook page at What Fresh Hellcast, join the page and join the group.
Or you can come find us on Twitter at WFH Podcast.
And we're on Instagram at What Fresh Hellcast. And you can always find us on our website, whatfreshhellpodcast.com.
And with that, guys, we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.